You're listening to KHPR, the Sonic Transformation Podcast, brought to you by the Order of Taliesin of the Temple of Set. I'm Eric Caution, your host, bringing you another enlightening presentation. So sit back, relax, and prepare to kefir and remanifest. Hello, this is Eric Caution, and for this podcast, we have a presentation by the former High Priest of the Temple of Set, Ipsissimus Don Webb, entitled, The Task of the Magus. During this talk, Don will tell you about this most often misunderstood initiatory degree, and how the work of the Magus affects the world. We hope you enjoy it.
There is a cost involved. The cost for the lecture is, at some point in the next year, you write, you talk, you interact with some other Setian about what you've heard here. I don't care if you agree. Your discussion can be, you know, the High Priest is so full of it. Here's what he said. The framing is up to you. This is a real cost, and you have this cost fall upon you if you remain for the next few minutes. Normally, I don't pick particularly pompous themes for my discussions. I was going to call this a bunch of stuff I've been really thinking about the last 6 months. Which, while though an accurate description, does not, in fact, convey the fact that there are some fairly important ideas that I'm going to talk about today. The task of the Magus requires three types of teaching. The first type is the written correspondence. Written words have been pretty much in favor since the Egyptians came up with them a little over 5,000 years ago. Some people might want to argue it's the Sumerians who've been neck and neck in terms of archaeology the last few years. See, one archaeologist in the room disagrees. The second type of teaching is the oral teaching. This is what I reserve for conflict. Even if there are tapes of this made, the teaching itself comes in a very, very special way. As we have learned through years, each of these magical workings called conclave call into existence a large number of factors that totally determine your chemistry when you hear the words. For those of you who were at the Danvers conclave, you'll probably think how much the physical environment totally shaped what you heard, or Munich, or London, or the last time we were in Las Vegas, or in San Francisco. Everything from where Setians can get together to talk, to how much noise they hear, to how polluted an atmosphere they breathe. All of these things prepare you in a certain unique way to receive the oral teaching. The third way the Magus teaches is by example. He or she does things in the world. And to people that pay attention, they say, okay, I'm kind of get what this person's about. And to people who don't pay attention, the Magus becomes a cult figure. Only people who realize how fragile, human, and slightly insane the Magi are those who can benefit from their teaching. Those who take a Magus and say, this person is great, they have done all things well, you may know that the teaching is utterly false. I call this talk 12 Secrets of the Cosmos. Actually, I will give you 60 Secrets of the Cosmos, but I will draw attention to 12 of them. You may later during the talk see if you can reconstruct all 60. A secret for a magician is something that they have access to from time to time. Almost everything I'm going to say today, you will have figured out at one moment in your life a time of blinding illumination. You will think, when you first realize it, I will never forget this. The world is clear to me. This is really great. 20 minutes later, you pay the power bill, get the phone call from the telephone solicitor, or throw away your 4 new credit card offers that come in the mail, and this secret is lost. In the Greek language, we have a wonderful word, musa, means reminder. In English, we call it muse, because the Greek language tells us that all truths are forgotten, and you have to forge some way to remember them. The way that we forge to remember truths in the Temple of Set is the vehicle called the Temple of Set. The temple brings you nothing, but it can give you a way to remember what you have occasionally glimpsed. Every secret I tell you, you will forget today. You will remember who knows when and under what circumstance. And most likely, you will forget that you heard it from me, because you will recast it in ways uniquely your own. That is because that is how I receive secrets all of my life. I will not claim any originality in anything I have to say to you today. As most of you know, in my own cosmology, which I presented to the Temple of Set as a gift, which you can take or leave, it's not my concern, I arbitrarily divide all of experience into 4 levels of being. I describe it to a physical level, an emotional level, an intellectual level, and a daemonic level. And I'm going to share 3 secrets from each level. This is the Archibald Leach Memorial Lecture. All right, I already realized a couple of people understood the joke. You can leave now, it doesn't get better than that. But for the rest of you, that will be something I will come back to. The figure of Archibald Leach was pointed out to me by an acquaintance, a man named Robert Anton Wilson. And his pointing that out to me gave me a moment of satori that hopefully I will be able to share with you. I know that most of you had your lives deeply influenced by Archibald Leach in one way or another. I will make some references to Egyptian solar craft. This is not because the Egyptians were smarter than us. This is because of a great secret discovered by George Ivanovich Gurdjieff, which was, if you want to tell people real truths, make it sound a little bit like bullshit, and they will remember them. Therefore, I will put a slightly occultic phrase in my talks. That's only for your benefit. It has nothing to do with the understanding. First thing I'd like to talk about is the body, the cot. And here's the first secret. When you chose to be born, you chose to learn one thing. We are on this planet to learn one art. It is the art of consequence. The place your psyche comes from does not have consequence as one of its rules. Consequence is the most terrifying, energizing, frustrating, and ecstasy-producing thing on this world. Everything you do, everything that happens to you, forces you to become an individual. You acquire history every second. And for the majority of choices that you make, you have no idea what the effect will be. There are several people choosing not to come to my lecture. They may be down in the casino and they may win a car, and probably that will affect them much more than hearing the lecture. Some of the choices that you've made, you're totally unaware of, like who you're sitting with, what you ate for breakfast, whether or not, oh, I'm sorry about the occasional noise. This lecture is sponsored by Hall's Mentholyptus, the soothing vapor action. And you will hear the clicking of the Hall's cough drop from time to time, nicely amplified. There's a lesson that comes with the art of consequence. You are able, although you do not remember this now because of your current state, to make the decision to be born. What you are going to learn during your time on this earth is how to make decisions that are that profound, but not that unconscious. To learning to be a god is learning the art of consequence, knowing when to act at the right time to produce the right effect. And you only learn this through actions involving your body, real physical things. The body is the one and only magical teacher you can be sure will be with you your whole life. It will also be by far the toughest teacher you will ever have. Respect it well. The second secret involving the body. The body is very, very robotic. It learns schedules very well. That's one of the ways you learn the art of consequence. The body, however, can teach you how to break free from cycles. In our own system, we call this remanifestation. Only by doing something different with your body can you, in fact, break free of cycles. Remanifestation is not a thing of the mind. It does not matter. Think the best thoughts in the world. I bet there are thoughts being thought in this room right now that if we were aware of their brilliance, we'd be blinded of them. Remanifestation comes when you don't allow yourself to be caught in a trap you've been caught in. Remanifestation comes in simple ways. Perhaps it's the giving up of an addiction. Perhaps it's not having a fight with somebody. You always have a fight with them. Remanifestation is also generally slightly unpleasant because you're pulling yourself out of a stream of being and choosing another one. And your body will help you mark that forever by all the states it gives you. Once again, the body is your best magical teacher. Man, it's subtle laws, and you have to obey them. Future. Not the actual future that you can tell where you are. There are extraordinary degrees, and I certainly don't intend to do that with hardly any of you. The Ba is a source of energy. The Ba will bring you energy to fulfill the emotional state you choose to live in. This is exceedingly bad news because we do not choose the right emotional state. And by the way, choosing an emotional state is not like this. Otherwise, everyone in the room would be happy right now. Let's be happy. That worked for some people. But for the rest of us, it's very difficult. The emotional states that you choose, habitual states, is what you'll have energy for. If your habitual state is you want to be angry and pissed off all the time, you will have infinite emotional energy to do that. And your Ba, which exerts a force on the world around you, will make sure that the world gives you plenty of opportunities to be mad. Changing this energy is not affected by initiation. Initiation does not improve character. It makes you stronger. That's why it's the Prince of Darkness. If he could have worked it another way, he would. He has constraints to it. You have to choose the energy. And the energy that people choose, I will tell you, this is one of the few aspects of initiation that is gender related that I will talk about. Men are much better at summoning a specific energy type than women. This is why the world sucks. Because of their physical configuration, women are more open to dialogue with their body. That's because they have to attach new beings to the world. They have particular contact with the life force. You will notice that the organizations of mankind that thrive always thrive because of the women. Because the women are the ones that say, no matter what's going on, we got to keep this going. They don't get really excited when things are going well, and when things are going badly, they're the ones that continue. Men learn early on to summon two emotional states that are very bad. One of these emotional states is the feeling that they are unique. Now that might surprise you when I say that's a bad state, because we're supposedly a group seeking individuation. The feeling that you are unique means you don't need to be individuated. If you talk to men more than women, you will discover every man will tell you their problems are theirs alone, and there's nobody like them in the whole frigging cosmos. One of the things at the Dealing with Aging Parents talk, when someone said, how many people, when talking to their mother, hold the phone away so mom can finish talking? And 3/4 of the room put up their hand. You are not unique in your problems. Your problems are the same. They're the same set issued to everyone attending this school, which is called Earth. The other feeling that men tend to summon to themselves is the feeling of being powerful. This is a deadly feeling. This makes you think you can fly the damn plane into the tower and you will survive. Because of these feelings that are summoned by men, men have been ruling the planet for the last couple of thousand years. That, by the way, is going to change. Just thought I would let you know. I'm not pleased with the change. I would much rather the planet continue to be run by men because I know the rules. It's because as we have more and more power as a species, we need not to have the kind of individual who can imagine they have a great destiny as opposed to create one. Of course, the men that get beyond these two deadly feelings will become so powerful in the world it is to be that will leave the rest of us looking, why the hell did I hold on to this? I will now talk about the mind, the intellect, the ego. As we hold in the Temple of Set, the mind is the greater black magical working of Set upon this world. We can't really take credit for having it. It has certain powers and certain drawbacks. And when I talk about their secrets of the mind, I'll talk about these powers and their drawbacks. But the first thing that I will tell you is the mind, in its rational training, above all what must remain the touchstone of the temple. Not the emotions, not one's magical background, not one's physical culture, but the mind. Because our job on this planet is to take this thing called the mind, this wonderful consciousness, and introduce it into the magical realm, because it does not exist there. Now, I will speak about the secrets of the mind. The first thing your mind does is it produces an illusion of continuity in your lives. This is very helpful. If you didn't have this, the onslaught of daily experience would destroy you on any given day. The mind threads every experience together and says this is happening to a unified individual. Most of us, as we begin our initiatory process, discover I'm not actually a unified individual. The mind has given me an illusion of this. It's a pretty good illusion. The only way that it causes a weakness is it hides the power of magic in your life. I discussed this earlier at Rizzietti's presentation when he had made the provocative statement, the heart leads us to the temple. Because that's just a scary damn thing. I want to think I came here because I thought it out, scoped out his principles, and decided logically it was good for me. No. It's one of the few things in my life that I was totally like, okay, I'm clueless here. I'm getting signals from somewhere else, and I better do this. The mind hides our magical experiences. And then tells us that false experiences are magical. What's the least magical thing we can do? The least magical thing we do is we put on black robes and read a script. That has about this much energy compared to real magical. The mind has to stay away from that because we came to this world to learn about consequence, and we can't deal with that boiling chaos directly. The mind, the second thing I will say about it, is the most easily displaced part of our makeup. We are more willing to put aside our rationality than anything in the world. Partially that's because minds are very new. They just haven't been around a long time. At least here. I mean this planet, not Las Vegas. We have an entire school of magic in the temple devoted to the fact you can make anyone displace their minds with a few words, gestures, clothing, smell, whatever. LBM is entirely knocking the mind out of somebody else. Take their mind away, they have no will. Are we good at this? No. You want to see something that's good at it? Turn on CNN. CNN is actually a perfect manifestation of the force that hates the mind. And we are, of course, in a temple to a force that hates the mind. It's very easily displaced. Does this mean the Prince of Darkness is a wimp because this was his best thing he could construct? No, it means the one thing we have to learn to do is not allow the mind to be displaced. That's it. There's entire schools of thought. That's the only thing they got. That was all of Gurdjieff's message. Don't forget. Remember, it's still you. I have summed up all of Gurdjieff's teachings there. The rest is all technique. Our teaching is slightly better, which is, don't forget, it's still you, and by the way, magic works. Tough teaching. Much harder than I think. The third thing I would like to say about the mind. It is the gateway to not being Archibald Leach. Many people recognize that name? Oh. See, some people already were passing the test. The lovely name Archibald Leach is the name of an actor whom you probably know as Cary Grant, who found that the name Cary Grant was somehow better for leading roles than Archibald Leach. Go figure. And there's a wonderful moment. He grew up exceedingly poor. His health was not great. He had good looks and a gift of gab. And early on, he got into pictures. There's a great moment in one of his films called My Gal Friday. And in My Gal Friday, he starts improvising with this actress, where he's trying to show how tough he is. And he says the immortal lines, "There was a guy," and I'm going to not quote the lines directly, "so when you go home and discover this is not quoted wrong, do not send me email." "It's a guy that gave me trouble a couple of weeks ago. Tried to stop me at what I was doing. Name was Archibald Leach. And I left him smiling from ear to ear." In short, Cary Grant killed Archibald Leach. He escaped the traps that we call culture, history, and genetics. He was no longer a robot, and the only path out of that, the only path to freedom to create yourself, is the path of the mind. Because of the mind, we can examine non-traditional cultures. We can learn about the world. We can learn things about ourselves, and we can make decisions for the future. That is the gift that Set gives us. That is the way out of the organic historical matrix. That is why it is most sacred. I will say some things now about how the mind, the Eve, produces energy. The way the mind produces energy is by taking in information that is difficult to understand and integrating it with existing contents of information, discarding those things it finds to be false. The mind must be fed. It must be fed daily. It must be fed things that are solid and nutritious and have a great amount of variety. It must be fed things that challenge it. If it is not fed these things, its energy will go away. There are numerous people who have not fed their minds in a long period of time. Many of them are in the United States Senate. The people that do not feed their minds still appear to be extraordinarily intelligent. But their minds never give them information. We so celebrate the mind in the Temple of Set, we have reserved one degree entirely for its celebration. And that's the first degree. And that is the one degree we do really well. These other states of being, we're not entirely sure how to do well yet. We'll get them down. First degree is the one we've gotten down the best. Ways of giving information verbally and non-verbally to people, they come out with greater information. And if you can learn the joys you had during your first degree, if that's the only thing you learned during the temple, you are so far ahead of the game. Because you can turn that same desire to know against the world, and you will never be bored again. And of all the enemies of Kepler, the strongest and most evil is the one called boredom. And I laugh at anyone that says they're interested in personal immortality and have not learned how to get through boredom. Boy, if you don't know how to spend a Sunday afternoon by yourself, You don't want the millennium. The Eve must engage in exchange with other minds and other times. And this exchange is not just the taking in of information, but that if you truly want to learn something, you teach it. Anyone who's ever been in a teaching role understands this. And one of the parts of your initiation is to gain teaching roles. And I don't mean teaching roles here inside the Temple of Set. The last thing we need here right now is more teachers. I mean teaching roles in the world. One of the ways you modify your life circumstances as you go through them is to set yourself up as a teacher. Because as you refine what you've learned and pass it on, this is another source of information in the mind. This is correlating with its contents. Setians cannot go live in the forest by themselves. We are people who have to pass on what we've learned. This was set up as a major part of the Prince of Darkness's working. That's why the Black Flame keeps being reignited on the planet. Because someone writes it down, carves it in stone, paints a picture, makes some music for their own benefit, their own energy, and someone else comes along and picks it up again. And if all you're doing is picking up things and not putting it out in your own life, your mind is about half starved. And the mind is that only gateway to not being Archibald Beach. I will now talk about the daimonic realm. The Ankh. Before I begin to talk about it, I much earlier made a very provocative statement. I said that the mind, that consciousness, does not exist in that realm. I noticed some people shaking their head negatively, some people shaking their head like, my God, someone else has figured it out, and most people thinking, is he going to last the full hour and 15 minutes? The magical realm is not conscious. It has forces in it that are extraordinarily vast that actually rule the world. When people discover the vastness of magic on this planet in the course of their initiation, they usually go bug-fuck crazy from 2 weeks to 6 months. Usually this happens during the second degree. We don't have a section on this in the Ruby Tablet called What to Do If You're Bug-Fuck Crazy. The world is ruled by unconscious magic. It creates events in the invoked future that are extraordinarily stupid and terrifying, or wonderful and delightful, or just plain weird. If you notice, almost all human behavior that's not connected with survival is magical behavior. If you are not familiar with the amount of ritual in the world, walk to the casino. You will not find a non-magician out there. Fortunately, since they are unconscious, they can do very little. 7 billion unconscious people can do a great deal. This year, we are celebrating the gift of consciousness coming to the world. And we chose as an image, I chose as an image, a monolith from 2001. Big, rectangular object, you touch it, you get something going on. What did the unconscious world choose for us? What's going on with them? Big, rectangular object, You touch it with a plane, you get something going on. Their magic, much bigger than ours. From time to time, we have a little test. There are several tests embedded in SETI initiation. One of the big tests is the NOPSI test. You know, you expect if you're a priest, at some point your first creed comes to you and say, why is that category with the Nazis on there? Are we Nazis? What are we supposed to learn here? I'm scared. You know, my first response is, you're not scared enough. But the Nazis do two things. One, they knew the first 8 secrets I went over. Everything except the gate to getting out of tradition. They understood everything about how your biology and your emotions and the beginnings of your mind work. And then they did something utterly terrible. They gave magical technology to ignorant, stupid thugs. How well did that work? Well, two things made Nazi Germany. Number one was American investment. I just hope sometime in my life America fights some war of someone we didn't train in finance. Are our lives, are we that poor? And number two was magic. And they gave magic to everybody. And people were strongly connected to a totally unconscious current. And the unconscious currents are much bigger than what we do. Now, I will say my three secrets about the Ankh. As I have said, mankind has been ruled and is ruled largely by magic. When the mind began to exert itself in a really useful way, which was about 2,500 years ago with the Greeks. You know, the Egyptians thought a lot of stuff, but it was the Greeks that had the big breakthrough, which was, I want to talk about what's in my mind so I can find out what's in your mind, and let's use the same language. Let's keep those terms pretty small. And they created philosophy as a side effect. Why did they do that? Because they were freaking mercenaries going to the Black Sea and going to Egypt. And they came back, and the people in Egypt said, I really learned a lot from these people. The ones who went to the Black Sea said, I learned shamanic transfer. And they're like, we can't talk anymore. You know, you want to use these words like Nejiru, which I can't even say because I'm an Indo-European speaker. There's a really nasty diphthong in the middle of that my mouth will never make. And the people from the Black Sea says, well, I can't explain it to you, but I can wrap you in a cloth for 3 days and you're going to get something out of it. So they had to. They had to invent these things. This is where Prince of Darkness's work came together. Once you understand the intricacy that he's had to put together to get the mind going, you will never have ego problems again. Because no matter how good you're doing, you'll just kind of pause for a moment and go, okay, that really is a great one. Boy, that Grand Canyon, bigger than my ditch. The mind has come to rule the world, and it's done a fairly good job of it. The side effect of that has been, for magicians, really bad news. There aren't any positions for sorcerer in residence anymore. You can't go apply. Well, generally in the White House, you cannot apply for a position of being the reader and advisor of the president. However, the world is undergoing a change, and one of the changes is the world is now becoming so saturated with information that there will be a place for people can deal with huge fields of information, receive information from it, place certain patterns in it. That doorway is opening. And it's opening because of the series of magical workings that's gone on for the last century. The magician is making a comeback. And I tell you now, if you are not extraordinarily careful, you will not take advantage of this fact. Because when the magician fully makes her comeback, they will not be called magicians. There will not be, again, the place for the sorcerer in presence. But I believe, you know, our magic has been opening the door. The things that began in 1902 for Guido von Liszt, or 1904 for Aleister Crowley, or a few years earlier than that for Madame Blavatsky, are opening the door. The world is actually becoming more ready for these things. That's even why our founder was a professional sorcerer. We just call it psyops. We have opened the door. We better start looking for places to go through the door and provide the world something useful. Otherwise, we open the door for other people. My teacher, Stephen Edward Flowers, received the word runa in year 9 and spent an entire year doing a daily working to make the world open to runic knowledge called the Mead Rite. If any of you are members of the Rune Guild, you know this is in the Guild display. Long and somewhat ornate rite that only sometimes actually only a second degree at the time can do. In other words, you throw all your magic at it and the kitchen sink. At the end of the year, he was like, now I'm ready. Now I'm going to prepare myself mentally. I'm going to do the work I need to do. I'm going to cast runes into the world. I've opened the door. He sure did, because at the end of the year, St. Martin's released Ralph Plum's Book of Runes, which became an immediate bestseller. We've opened the door for the coming into being of a magical rulership. What we need to be sure to do in the next century are be those rulers and discover the kinds of jobs that belong to those rulers. Magic is making a comeback, my first secret of the art. My second secret. The magical realm is where you will live after you have stopped living here. You must prepare for yourself a vehicle of immortality there. That force has to learn to sustain you just the way going down to the buffet here sustains you. We'll hopefully do a little better than that, actually. Magical realm is the place where one creates your next vehicle. You will not be connected to the world in the way you're connected to the world now, although you may have certain affinities that you leave behind. Every time you practice magic, you're making a trial run for immortality. Many people have not understood why our founder, Dr. Michael Quino, in his wonderful essay, Black Magic, says don't use magic for everybody. Giving the example of you wouldn't want to eat a hot dog on a china plate. It's because magic is the trial run for immortality. You're building the shape of your soul. And if you choose to build the shape of your soul by doing nothing but, I don't know, prosperity workings, you're not going to be doing so well living on eternity in a place where there isn't life. Although others may make some use of what you made out of yourselves. The last secret that I will say about the Ankh, I talk about the magical realm as being the next place you pass into. It is not the last place you pass into. place that you came from, the ultimate source, has other realms of possibility beyond magic that we cannot, in this place and time, talk about. They would be the proper fields of speculation for the 7th, 8th, and 9th degrees. If you are particularly interested in these things, I suggest you contact me about 1,000 years hence, and I will attempt to give you my findings. But there is a reality stronger and deeper than magic. And those of you who had a direct glimpse of our patron have some notion, although you cannot put into words, what that realm is like. Unfortunately, simply seeing that does not make you a better magician. In fact, it's a big drawback. The amazing thing is that we continue our initiation to become better without being people that just go out and sit on the gutter and rule because of what we've seen. This constitutes the verbal teaching of the Magus Seth God on the cosmos. We can talk about other things or about this lecture, or we can leave. But I want to tell you, this has been a magical utterance. And even those of you that hear this later through a recording device, the magical moment, you will have to go and meet someone who's at the talk. My cosmology is not the best one. There will be better ones later. Some of them will be simpler, some of them will be vastly elegant, because the map can be divided up in a lot of different ways. But this cosmology could not exist without those who have gone before me, those who come after, and those who are here now. And each of you, as you develop your own map of the cosmos, will have that same paradox, the need for the other, who you must create.
This is Eric Caution thanking you for listening. If you have any questions, you can write to us at khpr@keffer.org. or visit our website at khpr.soundhouse.com. We hope you'll return again to Keffer and Remanifest. You've been listening to a presentation by KHPR, the Sonic Transformation Podcast, brought to you by the Order of Taliesin of the Temple of Set. This is Eric Caution, your host, hoping you enjoyed this presentation, and we'll come back again. Keffer.